Good morning, everybody. 8th of December, 2024. It is time for Sunday Morning Live, and welcome to the Church of Reason. We'll get straight into your questions and comments, of course. Support for the show is gratefully, deeply, and humbly appreciated at freedomain.com/donate, or, of course, you can tip on the apps here, which makes my nipples hard. I'm sure you'd love to see that as the reason I go shoulder down with the camera, right? All right. Somebody say, somebody hit me. Steph, I recently became part of a social group, which I very much enjoy. But in the group is also a guy who is openly anti-Trump, pro-lockdown, pro-vax, pro-Ukraine, pro-Ukraine, etc. Yesterday, he brought up how he participated in a fundraiser to buy weapons for Ukraine, which led to a heated discussion between me and him. Although he was visibly angry, he was not aggressive towards me. He was using arguments, even though they were bad, and a bit of sophistry. Later, he told me that he didn't want any hostility between us because of, quote, different opinions. I respect him for trying to debate and not just spewing the typical NPC stuff, but I still don't feel comfortable having him in my life. The problem is that I want to continue to be part of the group. Other people in the group seem to be avoidant of these controversial topics. Should I try to get this guy ostracized from the group, or should I just, quote, give up and leave the group myself? So, binary thinking is trauma. Well, I only have X or Y. I only have X or Y. So that is when you have no control, you are given binary options, right? Your parents, teachers, right? You're given binary options. When you become an adult, right, you have the 360 view. 360, it's a bowl of opportunities, right? Forks in the road are what are imposed by authority. So the moment that you think of yourself having binary options, recognize that you're in a state of trauma. You're in a state of powerlessness. Well, all I can do is X or Y. And the way that you get over or oppose that trauma response is to say, hey, I got a blank slate on which to write anything. I'm not going to go with these artificial dualities, right? So let's play this out as a group. Let's play this out as a group. So you're in a social group. There's some guy who is, I hate to say this, but he's spewing pro-violence, pro-war sentiments, right? He wants people slaughtered, and he's in fact raising money to get people slaughtered, right? I mean, you understand that in this war between Ukraine and Russia, old men are being conscripted, which means enslaved and worse than slavery, right? And young men, very young men, right? And what, 600,000 Ukrainian men left the country rather than fight. So, and of course, if people were not enthusiastically supporting the war, then the two parties would have to negotiate for some resolution, right? So, it's not just different opinions. You know, different opinions is, you know, what's the best band that came out in the 1960s? Those are different opinions. Who's a better actor, right? I like navy blue. Pale blue is chilly, cold, and the color for sociopaths. Well, that's actually not an opinion. That's actually just a basic metaphysical fact. So it's not just difference of opinions. Difference of opinions are when nobody gets slaughtered, right? So it's not just a difference of opinion. So let's play this out. Let's pretend. Let's pretend that we are post-trauma and we have this challenge of a social group with an aggressive NPC in it that makes it unpleasant. So rather than saying, I either get him kicked out or I leave the group, what are other potential options? What are other potential options to solve this problem? I don't like the idea of just bailing on a group because there's this kind of person in it, what other options could there be? All right, let me just make sure. Oh, some Dave says, finished listening to your novel, The Future, for a second time. Painfully good performance and writing. So many emotions and brutal honesty. Yeah, that is great. That's a great book. So yeah, what are the other options? All right, try reasoning with him. That's an option. Counter the NPC talking points with the truth and see how everyone reacts. Talk to the other people. Ask them why he is there. Choose not to hang out if he shows up. Find a different group. Don't engage with him. Or allow him to talk loudly and just watch what others react to and how. Ask him if he would pay to have his neighbors fight each other to the death while people across the street all profit off death and destruction. Go interact with others in the group. Bring it into the personal rather than debate him on politics. Try to explore more why he thinks the way he does. So these are all options. These are all options. Another option would be to take the people that you find the most pleasant and positive and reasonable in the group and start a new group. The other thing, and this would be to try to ostracize him, what you would do, again, I'm not saying what you should do, but what you could do is you could provoke him. And I don't mean like just pointlessly needle him, but say, well, why don't you, if you believe in the war, you can go fight. Like Ukraine is perfectly willing to accept soldiers from overseas or anyone and train them, right? So why not go fight? If this is something you really believe in, right? I would say something like, you don't want to be like this Mark Zuckerberg hypocrisy machine, right? Which is like, well, you should reduce your carbon while I sail around in a 300-foot, multi-hundred-million-dollar mega yacht, you know? So you just don't like go, I'm sorry, I'm not sure why you're here. Why are you here? There's a war going on. You want to fight? Go fight. Why are you talking to me? There's a war there. They're eager to have you come and fight. It's cheap to fly over. They'll train you. They'll put you on the lines. Why aren't you going to fight? Well, I can do more good. Oh, so the war is good if other people die, but you wouldn't want to risk yourself. Well, that's kind of pathetic, isn't it? So what you do is, and you do this calmly, and I've done this multiple times over the course of my life with somebody who has absolutely hypocritical and dickish vanity opinions. It's just signaling, virtue signaling, right? So he says, well, I can do more good here than there. It's like, how do you know? How do you know? So why wouldn't you go and fight? I don't understand. It's like you're saying it's really good to return people's stolen property, and then you just keep hanging on to all this property you steal. Like, it's bizarre to me. I don't understand. Oh, I can do more good here than there. Well, that's not your decision to make. Go fly over, offer yourself up as a soldier. And if they say, no, we prefer for you to stay back, okay, then you can say that. But you're just making that up at the moment. You haven't consulted with the actual people you're claiming to defend. So just be relentless and patient and calm and reasonable and say, I don't understand. Why are you telling me? Like, if you think this war is just right and virtuous and good, go do it. And if he's too old, say, well, I'm sure you have sons. Have you convinced your sons to go over? Have you convinced your nephews, if they're of age, to go over? Like, I don't understand why you're talking about it. I mean, it's very easy. You understand it's very easy to talk about war when you've got no skin in the game. It's very easy to praise war when you face no danger. And I don't in particular have respect for people who praise war and relentlessly avoid fighting. I mean, I don't have any particular respect for people who fight, who praise war, other than sort of pure immediate defensive wars, who praise war and fight, that's bad enough. But to praise war and not fight is really sad. It's really, like, and if he doesn't have sons, okay, if you had sons, would you be convincing them to go and fight? Well, we do more good here. It's like, okay, so then you are in a situation where you are enabling other people to die and praising other people dying, but not going to fight yourself, right? And then you turn to the group and you say, okay, hands up if you would go with this guy to go fight. I mean, hands up. Would you go with this guy to go fight in Ukraine where you're going to get disassembled by some flamethrower spitting sky drone, right? I mean, have you seen the videos of the men begging for their lives prior to being carved up by some horrendous human disassembling weaponry? And then I would ask him, do a little studying, right? Do a little studying beforehand, right? I mean, I've got videos on Ukraine going back to 2013, I think. So you would just do some studying, right? And you'd spend an hour or two studying the history of the region and studying the history of Ukraine and its relations to Russia and so on. And you would go and say, okay, like I respect that you have strong opinions about this and I'm willing to be educated. So you support this war. Tell me a little bit about the history of the war, right? And he's going to say, well, Russia just invaded Ukraine completely unprovoked, right? Right? And then I would say, okay, so obviously that's, for people who are pro-Ukraine and pro the war on the Ukrainian side, that's what they would believe, right? But obviously there are two sides to a war, like there are two sides to every conflict, right? Very rarely in this world are there just perfectly virtuous people fighting perfectly evil people. And there's no moral gray or complexity, right? I mean, Ukraine has shut down a bunch of churches and Ukraine has suspended elections and so on, right? So I would ask him about the history and say, well, I'm not like, what is Russia's perspective on the war, right? Which is not to say that you agree with it, but you surely would understand it. You wouldn't just want to hear one side of a conflict, right? That would not be fair, right? So what is Russia's argument as to why the war happened? And he probably doesn't know, right? Or, you know, what were the events that were happening prior to the war that Russia was bothered and upset about, right? And, you know, one of the things that Russia was upset about, of course, was the fact that, was it 92, 93, they said, we're not going to go at all eastward. Russia said, okay, Germany can reunify, but you can't send NATO eastward because Europeans keep invading Russia. And I would say, okay, how many times has Europe invaded Russia over the past 500 years? A European country, how many times have they invaded Russia over the last 500 years? He wouldn't know. Okay, so what was bothering Russia? Did the West break any of its promises to Russia in terms of NATO going eastward? And would you accept, say, if you live in America, would you accept communist China putting rockets on the Mexican border that could eliminate targets in the U.S. before any chance of a response? Right? Wouldn't that, like, would you support an invasion of Mexico? At least some areas of Mexico, if a genuinely hostile power that had repeatedly invaded America in the past, which I think has only been Canada, more of 1812, right? So you would just ask him these basic questions to sort of probe his knowledge of the conflict as a whole. Now, please understand, I'm not justifying either Russia or Ukraine. I'm saying that there are two sides to the story, right? There are two sides to the story, and it's important to understand both sides. Doesn't mean to agree both sides, right? I mean, to take a sort of silly example, if you're a marital counselor, like a marriage counselor, then you would listen to both sides. You wouldn't just say, oh, well, the wife is totally right, or the husband is totally right. So you would simply ask him about his general knowledge of the situation. And you would have the answers, right? So if you would say, okay, how many times has Russia been invaded by a European power over the last, say, 200 years? And it would be a couple, I mean, obviously Hitler and Napoleon, right? Other things. So oh, Japan invaded Alaska during World War II. Oh, thank you. I didn't know that. Okay, so you would simply ask him these questions and say, look, this is it's a very important thing. Obviously, we want to, you want to, you're very much more knowledgeable than I am, right? So honestly, read Socrates or read Plato describing Socrates, right? Because Socrates, as you know, was told by the oracle at Delphi that he was the wisest man alive. And Socrates said, well, that can't be true because I know virtually nothing. So he went around to, but also the oracle can't lie and is all-knowing. So I have a contradiction. I don't believe I'm the wisest guy because I don't know anything. The oracle says I'm the wisest guy. The oracle can't lie. So in order to resolve this problem in my mind, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go around to all of the people who claim to be wise, and I'm going to ask them how they know what they know and what the facts are. And this is where Socratic reasoning comes from, right? So if somebody says, well, look, I'm an expert on this war and I support this war. Okay. Great, educate me, right? Have the answers, right? Educate me. Educate me because for me, just me personally, this is me as Steph, if somebody justifies violence, they better fucking know what they're talking about or they're a total sociopath. In my view, if somebody's justifying hundreds of thousands of people being slaughtered, they better know what the fuck they're talking about, or they're just a total sociopath. Now, so I would just say, okay, well, tell me more. Like, you've obviously studied this a lot, and I would like to, I don't want to be wrong about this thing. So what is Russia's side? Well, I'm not going to view their side. And it's like, well, wait, hang on. How can you support one side in a conflict having no idea what the other side is, right? And then you would ask him, if hostile power put missiles that could take out U.S. targets in 1 or 2 minutes with no chance to respond from the U.S. If a hostile power put those rockets, like what happened with Cuba, right, and the Cuban Missile Crisis, if a hostile power put right on the border of America, would you consider that threatening, especially if that hostile power had invaded a bunch of times, not Ukraine specifically, but sort of Western powers? So, I mean, would you, you know, ask that Zelensky wanted to end the war or prevent the war at the beginning, but British, somebody flew out from England and prevented it, and then Kamala Harris flew out, and right? So you would just do a whole bunch of research and say, you know, I'm really sorry the way we left things last. I mean, I got kind of heated, and I'm sure that you would prefer for there to be no war. So just sort of help me understand this conflict, right? Help me understand this conflict, right? So, you know, what's Ukraine's side? Well, Ukraine, this is, you know, Slava Ukraine, right? You're innocent, just sitting there minding its own business, and evil Putin invaded for no reason. Okay, so that's one side. Now, I would then say, you're aware that there's a lot of propaganda in war, right? There is a lot. I mean, war is essentially propaganda, right? Doesn't mean that everything about a war is false, but it means that we should be skeptical about things we hear, particularly about a war in progress. So what is Russia's side, which is not to agree with Russia's side, maybe they are totally evil or whatever, right? But what is Russia's side? And you can do this in a sort of calm and patient way. And if it's like, oh, Russia's just totally in the wrong, it's like, eh, but we already accepted. Like, you know that there's a lot of propaganda about wars in the past, right? Like, you know that the Vietnam War was started on the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which didn't happen. And there was some falsehoods about Korea and so on, right? So, you know, we know that in the past there's been a lot of propaganda. The idea that there's no propaganda now is really not very believable. That 100% of the propaganda is on Russia's side, and Ukraine is just telling the entire truth and all this kind of stuff, right? So I would just ask him a bunch of questions, and I don't think it would take very long. I don't think it would take very long to figure out that he had no fucking clue what he was talking about. He had no clue what he was talking about. And once, and again, you can kind of be calm and patient about this stuff. Not that I always achieve it, but in general, you can. And you can say, okay, so if I understand this correctly, you are very much for, you know, the mass slaughter of innocents, right? Just the average, you know, 18-year-old kid or 20-year-old kid who's kind of grabbed off the street, given bad training and thrown into a war that he doesn't want to be in, right? Because you understand, people are being enslaved to go to this war. It's not a volunteer war. It's not a volunteer. It's all conscription on both sides. So people have a gun to their head saying, shoot your, right? And what is it in Eastern Ukraine, the Donbass region? They're ethnically Russian, anybody. And it's just all of this sort of stuff, right? So I would say the justification for the mass slaughter of hundreds of thousands of people, you should be deeply knowledgeable about that, right? You can't just listen to propaganda, right? And it does it bother you? I would say, does it bother you that there's kind of essential things that you don't know, which, you know, we're not all omniscient or whatever, right? But does it bother you that there are essential things that you don't know about this conflict, but you support it anyway? Does that seem wise to you to support the mass slaughter of hundreds of thousands of people without having a full and well-rounded view of what's happening? Now, if he is humbled and he says, oof, you know what, I obviously have been making some assumptions, right? Now, he's very unlikely to do that in public, and in particular if there are females around, right? Men don't like to admit significant fault or any fault, really, when there are women around. So I would say, if he responds like, yes, that's a good point, I didn't really think of that, I guess I need to do more studying, well, that's good, then the problem is solved, right? If he says, no, you're just a stooge of Putin, and blah, it's like, okay, but just whether I'm a stooge of Putin or not, I'm not, obviously, but it still wouldn't erase the fact that you really don't know much about the conflict. You don't know much about the history of the region. Obviously, you don't speak Ukrainian, you don't speak Russian, and there's a lot of propaganda floating around. I don't know. I mean, I would say, and this is me, honestly, I don't know the entirety of the truth about all of this conflict. But I know that I don't know, and you think that you know, and you think you know enough to send weapons. To send weapons. In other words, you could volunteer to go and fight. You could volunteer to go and fight, but you don't. Whereas you support other people being dragged out of their beds at gunpoint and forced to fight. Oof, right? Oof, that is not great. Dave and William and Think Clearly, I really, really do appreciate that. So you can turn it into a demonstration of critical thinking, of reasoning, of curiosity, of, I don't know. I mean, look, if anyone's going to know the true causes of this conflict, it's going to come out in 50 years when someone leaks documents. So now, if this guy, and likelihood is he'll just escalate, blow up, and get aggressive, right? Now, the calmer you are, and the more aggressive he becomes, the more likely people are to not want to have him come back, right? The more likely people are to not want to have him come back. So, can you really reason with brainwashed people? The point of public debates is not the debate partner, it's the audience, right? You understand, the purpose of having this conversation with this guy is not to change his mind, but to change the minds of the audience. The audience is what matters in a debate, because he wants to still be part of this group. If he shows that he's reasonable and the other guy is a bit of a bloodthirsty psychopath who is really volatile and aggressive. See, the people who are pro-war simply through propaganda are masking a sociopathic bloodlust that they have a sadistic desire to watch people get killed. Now, they'll cloak it in all of this sort of nonsense, right? But that's really what's going on. And again, I'm not saying there's never, I mean, self-defense, perfect justification for the use of force and so on, so I get all of that. But, you know, the people who just swallow propaganda and repeat it, they're just covering up. And now what happens is, as you peel the layers of justifications off, the rage at the bottom bubbles up, comes to the surface, and attacks, right? Because his own vicious cruelty becomes apparent to him and to others, and he will react with extreme levels of aggression. And then, of course, you have a choice that is presented. Now, people don't like this choice. People don't want to have to choose, right? Most people. So what happens is, this guy is most likely to blow up, most likely to storm out, most likely, because you're getting him close to his own sadism, which means you're getting him close to his own trauma. So he's just going to, right? And his conscience, right? If he's been for years and years promoting a war he doesn't know much about, then his conscience is going to rise up, right? In other words, you're an agent of the devil, in a sense, and of the angels. You're an agent of the devil. You are presenting the bill to his conscience. I mean, this is my whole business plan, is I present the bill to the conscience. Because people appeasing and acquiescing and nodding, they are withholding the bill from the conscience. So this guy has a lot of blood on his hands, right? And he doesn't see it. He thinks he's got these white gloves of purity on, and you're pulling the gloves off and saying, look, it's blood, bone, gristle. You monster, right? And he sees it, and he's going to freak out. So then what happens is the corruption in his soul, so to speak, his corruption will become apparent to others. And then what you've done is you've given a clear choice to this social group. Now, if the social group turns on you, get the fuck out, because they will eat you alive. They're cannibals, right? If the social group turns upon you for questioning someone with a bloodthirsty lust for war, if they turn on you, then it means that they like the sociopath, and then I'm saving your ass by getting you out. If they are troubled by him and don't want him back in the group, then it's probably a group worth being part of. But you want to find this out. You want to find this out now, not later or not some other time. Is the group evil? Right? Is the group evil? Is the group evil? You got to find that out. But in order to find that out, you have to expose the evil in their midst, right? So they didn't see it because this guy was pro-war, but that's fairly advanced for a lot of normies. But if you point out that he's pro-war with no particular knowledge, then it's not because he understands the conflict that he's for this war. You would reveal that he's for this war because he's sadistic, because he likes watching death. He likes watching murder. He probably whacks off to drone videos of troops on both sides being disassembled. So they didn't see it because he's pro-war, but by revealing his ignorance of the war, you will reveal his true motives for the war, which are, I assume, sadistic and cruel. So then it's a clear choice for them. Okay, so you've got one guy who's willing to be instructed and curious and reasonable and so on, and then you've got another guy who wants to see hundreds of thousands of people killed and doesn't even have really the first clue about what's going on. So you're giving them a clear choice, right? The clearer the choice, the greater the morals. The clearer the choice, the greater the moral revelation. Right, I mean, I was reading this story the other day about this nurse who worked in an IVF clinic, and she got addicted to, I think it was fentanyl. And so what she did was she drained the fentanyl out of the pain-killing vials and injected it in herself and replaced that with saline. And then, so then when women at the IVF clinic were getting those giant needles going in to extract their eggs, they're supposed to be a lot of anesthetic in there, right? And they would say, they would scream in pain and jerk around and say, this is unbearable, this is ungodly, this is agony, and they didn't know why. And it's because they were giving mostly saline with very little fentanyl rather than fentanyl or whatever the drug was that was the painkiller. And this went on for months. And they said, oh, well, I guess we have a cluster of patients with very high pain sensitivity, right? It turns out the woman had been replaced in the fentanyl with saline, which meant that the women were pretty much not anesthetized when these giant needles were plunging into their midriff, right? So the people who put the pain-killing drugs in thought they were giving real drugs, and they couldn't give more because they were afraid the women were going to die, like OD or something, right? Because they thought they were pushing decent amounts of painkiller. So if someone is pushing painkiller, they think they're pushing painkiller, but they're not, then that's an innocent error, so to speak, right? But once they, I mean, can you imagine, not that this happened, can you imagine someone who's like, oh, wow, I can legitimately cause pain in someone by pretending to push fentanyl when it's mostly saline, or whatever the painkiller was. Well, then that would go from, I thought I was, to, I know I'm not. And then that goes from ignorance to sadism, right? So if these people are like, well, I've heard that the war is good, and this guy seems very passionate about it, so I guess it's fine. But once you expose the ignorance, you're giving a moral choice, not to the NPC in a sense, but you're giving the moral choice to the audience, right? And they don't particularly like it. They don't like it. People avoid clarity because then they don't have to feel like shitbirds for not taking a stand. That's why people like avoiding clarity. That's why people get so pissed off at the clarity that this kind of show provides. Not you guys, of course. But people get pissed off because people avoid moral clarity because when you have moral clarity, you have to make a stand or you feel like crap. Whereas if you avoid moral clarity by only listening, say, to one side of a propaganda conflict, if you avoid moral clarity, you don't have to take a stand, or at least you don't have to feel bad for taking a stand. I'm going to go to Grok. Grok is king of the universe. How many times has Russia been invaded by a European country? Let's find out. There we go. Russia has been invaded by European countries several times throughout history. Here are some notable instances. Swedish invasion during the Great Northern War, 1708 to 1709. French invasion by Napoleon. German invasions, both during World War I and World War II with Operation Barbarossa. And so I knew of the two, Germany and France, but since 1700 has been invaded by European countries at least three times by major powers. However, if we consider other conflicts or smaller engagements, the number could be seen as higher when taking into account various other conflicts or border skirmishes. And when you invade Russia, things go very badly for the local Russians, right? Russia is the largest country by landmass or something like that, right? But Russia, in general, does what's called the scorched earth policy. So they withdraw, they poison the wells, they slaughter the livestock, they withdraw, and then they let winter do its thing. That's in general how it goes, which is really brutal for... All right, so it's really brutal for the Russians. I wonder if the group would allow this to unravel. I find women tend to eye roll and huff and other micro things to try to shut people up, and then other people will rebut on their behalf. No, I get that with women, and I've had these conversations with women around, and they do tend to like, oh, let's not fight. I'm like, well, yes, exactly, let's not fight. But I said, so what I do with the women is I will say, you obviously love your children, you care about your children. So for the hundreds of thousands of young men who've been killed, or middle-aged men, or sometimes even older men, every one of them has a mother who is mourning the brutal death of a son. And you know that in this conflict, sometimes soldiers will film killing another soldier, and then we'll find that soldier's cell phone and we'll send the murder video or the death video or the killing video to his mother. It's one thing to get a telegram. It's one thing to get knock on the door from the war office. It's another thing to see your son being slaughtered. To have that video, to see that. Now, we want to avoid that if at all possible, right? It's one of the challenges that in the field of literature, right? Men will generally write about the world and women will write about women. A female reimagining of, a retelling of the Greek myths, you know, but it's always from the perspective of the women, right? And they say, oh, well, women were underrepresented and so on. So you just have to try and find a way as a whole for women to connect with, like, imagine if, you know, imagine, like, you've got a son right here, he's 19. Imagine if he was forced to go and fight, and then in 3 months, you get the video of him being killed on your phone. He's begging and pleading for his life. He's begging and pleading for his mother, as in general happened in World War I in the trenches. People die and cry out for their mothers, and you watch him be slaughtered. Surely we should do what we can, if possible, to reduce or avoid that situation. Now, of course, if the women are like, well, I don't care if mothers get murder videos of their own children, it's a just cause. Okay, well, I mean, why would you want to be in that kind of group? So, I'm afraid it's your job to bring moral choice to people, much though they will kick and scream and dislike you for it. It is your job as a person who knows virtue and who knows morals. It is your job to bring moral choice to people, though they will dislike you for it. That's all right. Moral ambiguity, moral complexity, moral fence-sitting is just a virus that needs to be expelled through moral clarity. If reconciliation can be achieved without the slaughter of hundreds of thousands of people, is that not better? Is that not better? So Ukraine has devolved into trench warfare because of the stalemate. It's very sad. Well, the purpose of war since, in many ways, the purpose of war since the First World War has been stalemate, because stalemate allows the war to continue, which allows sadists to enjoy the death and profiteers to continue to profit. The purpose of war is stalemate. That's why it so often is inconclusive, right? The purpose is to be inconclusive. The purpose of the war is to continue. So, you, and this is just one of a number of different options. I think it is probably the best and most powerful option. But it's not just, well, do I get the guy kicked out? And maybe you do, but maybe but this would be the way. Or do I leave the group and so on? Take a moral stand and see if the group is worthy of having you in it. Take a moral stand and see if the group is worthy of having you in it. Like, that's like me with the dissident movements of the 2010s, right? I took a stand and I saw whether that group was worthy of having me in it. Spoiler. It wasn't a spoiler. It's just facts. So much evil is being rushed through before Trump takes office. Yeah, for sure. They're definitely trying to get make it as bad for him as possible and get as much terrible stuff done as possible before So, sad but true. Yeah, I agree with you about that. All right. Here's a post. But let me gauge the audience first. From minus 10 to plus 10, please to tell little old Stephbot, what are your view of doctors? Minus 10, Mengele, plus 10, Robin Williams in some sentimental movie, right? What is your view of doctors, your doctor, doctors as a whole, the medical profession, but in particular doctors, not like I don't know, anesthesiologists or whatever, but in your current sort of way of thinking, minus 10, doctors are just terrible, to plus 10, doctors are fantastic and wonderful, benevolent servants of general good. Okay, we got minus 10, minus 5, minus 4, minus 10, minus 4, 0, minus 5, minus 5, minus 7, plus 8, most want to help people, plus 4, minus 6, minus 5, plus 1, minus 4, depends on their age usually. That's true. Plus 4, 3, 0, minus 5. Okay, so we got a good old scatter plot, right? We got a good old scatter plot. Minus 9, 5. My DVM, I don't know what DVM is, plus 10. Hard to paint all with the same brush. No, I'm not. Oh my. Yes, of course. That is. What is your opinion or view of doctors as a whole? And say, well, but there's variances. It's like, hard to paint all with the same brush. You're a veterinarian. DVM is your veterinarian. Okay, let's not count vets. Right. RRRY to go to, I think they're supposed to be only, please check your spelling, to go to homeopathic doctors. Oh, try. Okay. Plus 4, minus 3, I midwit. Okay. Minus 100. Okay. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are about this. Yeah, the exception to the rule stuff. Yeah, what's your general thought? Well, I can't tell. It's general. I mean, why people think that they're adding anything other than annoyance to intelligent people when they point out that there are exceptions to every general rule. Okay, minus 8. Oh, his veterinarian was good. Minus 8 to everyone else. Okay. All right. So the reason I'm asking this is Coffee Black MD on X wrote the following. So it's a bit of a longer post, but, you know, it's really, really important, I think, to talk about because there's a very, very important principle down at the bottom here. He said, I felt like writing a post in defense of physicians. We seem to be getting a lot of crap recently. But I don't know really where to start or what to say. There's so much cynicism and bad faith and really plain unhidden contempt these days. But why? Because we couldn't fix you and never could? Because you want us to be something we're not? A coach, a trainer, a knower of all things nutrition and all things non-pharmaceutical? A knower of every little niche thing you're into? That isn't how we're taught or trained. But that's our fault somehow that the reality of us doesn't meet with the expectation of you. So it doesn't open well. I don't think anyone's mad at doctors foundationally because doctors can't fix everyone. I don't think that's the case. So I think he's starting off with a wee bit of a straw man. It gets better from here, but okay. So he says, you're mad about how we don't have long periods of time for you, and this can lead to less accurate or optimal diagnosis or treatment. You're mad that drugs cost a lot. You're mad you pay for health insurance, and it seems like it never pays for much. Yet none of these phenomena are the fault of physicians. We're mad about those things too. You're mad about COVID and vaccines, a pandemic we didn't create, nor other endemic viruses we had anything to do with. You blame us for the vaccines and policies put in place by politicians and bureaucrats as if we are personally responsible? You get mad that we make a good salary. Tell us we only make this money because we did dirty tricks to prevent those there from being enough doctors. Decisions made decades ago based on predictions that seemed reasonable then but turned out wrong now, that those of us who are working currently had nothing to do with. Our knowledge, experience, and expertise downplayed. All that is needed out there is a smart teenager with an AI and access to any chemical they want. I don't even know how you even begin going after addressing all of it. It's rather daunting. I'm not sure I can, so I won't try. The thing is, I don't owe anyone any explanations or apologies. I've showed up every GD of this job to be the best doc I could for the people the Lord put in my path. And I've manned the effing wall against the dragons and barbarians with honor for a decade. Apparently he's not just a doctor, he's a paladin. I run into the rooms of the sick when everyone else is running out. I've stood in the gaps between life and death and fought hard for everyone, even the ones I lost. And you never really ever forget the ones you lose. It's been nights, weekends, holidays, birthdays, anniversaries, and kids' sporting events. I've taken those hits to my health and to my family life for the same people who just want to shit all over me and my profession today, and it's so heartbreaking and disappointing. I guess maybe you were disappointed by a doctor at some point. We clearly aren't infallible. We have bad days too. You can see the burnout in the way they make many physicians in clinic practice. I don't know what to tell you about the guys that are really awful. They do exist. They also aren't all or even most physicians. Most of what everyone is mad about has nothing to really do with us. It's policies and laws made by bureaucrats, politicians, corporations. We simply exist in it, try to work inside the crazy nonsense ourselves. We've never had a, quote, lobby, and it might be interesting to see what things would look like if we actually did. There are people working in this now, but mostly physicians have been too busy just being docs to get all caught up in any of it. There's barely anything left after a week in clinic for my family and some working out, let alone some cynical ploy or play to keep it hard for people to become physicians. I don't know if enough people really understand that, how really taxing and exhausting the work is. I wouldn't wish the responsibility on anyone either. Heavy is the white coat. This post probably won't change any minds of the bad faith actors, but I do hope it, in some way, humanizes us to you, if only in some small way. I'm just one guy fighting the good fight on tonight, actually, and holding down the fort, if any are in need of my expertise, and I hope not, no one meets me. In a good day, I'm here. Well, what do you think? What do you think? Somebody says, it's more profitable to treat symptoms. I stopped reading after that opening. This guy is the worst. I hate it when doctors that are clearly way out of shape try to give me the medical advice and also support the COVID nonsense. Making ticky-tacky videos while forcing jabs and blowing folks' lungs out. Go F yourself. I think most people lump in doctors with the healthcare industry. Insurance companies are almost equal to the definition of evil. They only care about profit. Most doctors have good intentions, even if they fail sometimes. Even they are human and have limitations with their knowledge. Doctors aren't trained to think independently, so someone a few TikToks melted their credibility forever. A lot of this plea reminds me of public school teachers. Zero accountability. So what, you couldn't take the time to evaluate the claims being made about COVID and the vaccines? Surely that would have been a good time to make sure you have it right. Reminds me of the lady who talks about her baby holding a lock on her hair in the show about how your kids don't love you. Dear doctor, says someone, until I see the man that oversaw the systematic death of my father hanging in sweet justice from a lamppost, you all suck. Right. Right. So as you probably know, I take feedback and criticisms, you know, very seriously, very seriously. I'm not trying to give you oily foot rubs, because that's a bonus, it's extra, it's on my Oni Stefan's channel. But I do have access and feel very privileged to be part of a great community of feedback. You guys are very smart, and I hope, obviously, that I've not given you any kind of impression that I am beyond criticism, I get mad at criticism. I need your help, as I need the help of the people who love me, as I need the help of my own conscience and philosophy, to do my best to walk the straight and narrow in this dangerous cliff edge of virtue, right? To do maximum philosophy without self-destruction is not the easiest gig in the known universe. So people have been saying to me, well, Steph, you know, you cuck to women, you know, you don't hold women accountable, you say that don't blame women, blame the state, and all of that. And I've been thinking about that kind of stuff. I really have. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring this stuff up, is I've really been percolating what my view is on all of this stuff deep down. I'm going to tell you what I think, which is not to say that I'm right. I'm just going to tell you where my thought process is with that, because I want to put it through the grinder of your skepticism and criticism to see what I can improve in my approach to these things. So let me tell you my approach to these things. It's absolutely true that if you want to be a doctor, you have to go through all of this licensure, and you have to pay massive amounts to medical schools, and you have to go into a lot of debt. And there are these sort of shadowy licensing boards that can just yank your ability to practice medicine like that. And it's pretty tough. It's pretty tough. A lot of doctors feared over the course of COVID that if they did not get people vaccinated with the COVID vaccine, that they might lose their license, that they might get suspended, they might get investigated, they might get charged by their licensing boards with some sort of professional misconduct or whatever. And they felt like, I assume that they felt, well, geez, if there's a pandemic, the last thing I want to do is have society be down one doctor as I fight this stuff, right? And you can see what happened with Dr. McCulloch and other people, a lot of blowback for raising any skepticism about the 100% efficacy and 100% safety, both of which are now proven to be false, of the vaccine, right? So there was a big challenge for doctors. And, you know, if you've not been in that kind of situation, it's easy to say, well, you should have just whatever, right? But it's not easy, right? I mean, we just spent the first half of the show talking about some guy who's pro-war in a social group, and it's not easy to deal with. It's real easy. It's real easy to say, this other person should burn their entire career to the ground for the sake of the truth, for the sake of standing up for what's right. The only people who say that are people who haven't done it. I'll be straight up with you about that. The only people who say, well, these doctors should have done this, or, you know, well, all the truckers stood up, if all the doctors had stood, I get all of that. But if you haven't actually done it, you're in Dunning-Kruger territory, where it's real easy to tell other people to burn their lives to the ground for the sake of doing the right thing. The only people who say that glibly are people who haven't done it themselves. They have all of the empathy of your average comic book character. Honestly, don't blame fellow victims totally. Could doctors have done better? Yeah, we can all do better. We can all do better. And there are some people in this audience, you have burned your life to the ground for the sake of doing the right thing. I think it's fair to say I've taken a hit or two over the past 20 years to do the right thing. But it's really, really not easy. And saying, well, other people should have just taken all these bullets. It's literally like saying other people should fight this war. Nothing is stopping you from doing the right thing. Right? From going on social media under your real name with your real photo. Talking about all the forbidden truths in the known universe. No one's stopping you from doing that. I'm not suggesting you do it. I'm just saying nobody's stopping you from doing it. And if you haven't done it, it's kind of precious to hurl slings and arrows and acid at other people for having discretion being the better part of valor. You know, for a doctor to risk his license, for what? Is it going to change much? Not really. Not really. But He gets to lose his income. He can't pay his debts. If he's got a wife and kids and she's staying home, he can't pay his bills. What's he going to do? Can't be a doctor. Is he going to go and try and do something else? Is he going to retrain to go do something else? That's not easy. That's not easy. I mean, I was willing to have a 97% reduction in my audience for the sake of the truth. But that's the gig of the moral philosopher, is to take whatever hits. It's not the job of the doctor in that way. So I'm not saying that all the doctors acted perfectly, of course not. But I'm just saying, don't be glib when asking other people to give up their lives. Because very few of us have done that. Don't be glib. That is a warning sign. The reason you don't want to be glib is good people will avoid you like the plague if you just scorn and roll your eyes at everyone who hasn't burned their life to the ground in pursuit of a truth they believe in. So, and I know, yep, Steve, I get it. I know that some of you have really taken some significant heat for the cause of truth. And I'm not trying to diminish that at all. But people who've really gone through the ringer for the cause of truth tend not to be as glib about telling other people you should just X, Y, or Z. Because for doctors as well, look, I mean, I think we can be pretty honest about this. Was it Mandy Patinkin many years ago played a really narcissistic doctor? And I think Dr. Bob, whatever his name was, right? And somebody was saying, rumors are that God has a Dr. Bob complex rather than Bob. Dr. Bob has a God complex. And there's a great scene in a pretty mediocre movie with Alec Baldwin. I think this is the one where he didn't shoot two people, but, you know, I'm board certified thoracic, I am God, you know, and, you know, he's got this arrogance. And, you know, there is that sort of aspect. So doctors, it's not just about the income, and it's not just about the diplomas on the wall, it's the status, right? Maybe their wife married them because marrying a doctor is very high status. They have a whole social circle where being a doctor, they socialize with other doctors. If they get dragged in front of a board, delicensed and disgraced, it's not just their income, it's their whole life. And, I mean, the last thing I would ever in a zillion years do is give anyone medical advice. I'm just talking about the economics of it. It is entirely possible that public health, that the health of the population improves because of skepticism about doctors. If people have a sense that doctors aren't particularly great at keeping you healthy or making you healthy, then what happens? What happens? Thank you, C2. Yeah, what happens? If people are like, ooh, I don't know if doctors have the very best intentions. Maybe they're just a bunch of people who want to cycle you through quickly and throw you on some pills for the rest of your life because the government pays for everything. Ooh, maybe, doctors can't make or keep me healthy in any foundational way in many circumstances. That kind of skepticism about the benevolence of doctors may genuinely and generally improve people's health. Right. May genuinely and generally improve people's health. If people are more skeptical of medical treatments, what will they do? Exercise and eat less in general, right? So people, oh, there's a crisis, there's a lack of faith in largely government medicine, right? It's not private medicine. It's lack of faith in government medicine. That may end up with people being healthier, right? I mean, you know that the more people have access to Medicare and Medicaid, the worse their health outcomes. If you think that there's a pill for every ill, you don't care that much about the ills. Right? So it could be to the betterment. Somebody says, there was a doctor who was righteous who left the hospital after my father's death in disgust. It's important to stand up and fight when it matters. I agree with that. But it's important to have some sympathy for the stakes that people have, right? Somebody says, it's not so easy. I am waiting until I retire to be honest about my opinions. Appreciate those who do. Yeah. People need to keep their livelihoods. The threat of losing your job is very important, could be considered a use of force. Well, for doctors, with regards to their licensure, it's not just losing your job, it's losing your capacity to practice as a doctor. My frustration is doctors don't correct themselves when you correct them. Well, but come on. Come on, man. You know why doctors don't admit fault, right? Okay, everybody, type after me. Why do doctors not want to admit fault? I've seen many a life saved by doctors in my life. I think I hold such a statement. -5 against doctors since COVID because I ended up choosing to get vaccinated and want someone to offload that responsibility to. Yeah. Well, I mean, is the threat of losing your livelihood the same as choosing? Not really. I mean, if somebody said to you, pay me $50,000 or I'm going to get you fired, not just from your job, but I'll make sure you're unable to work, right? That would be considered blackmail, right? I don't think that much of what happened in the hospitals was good. Yeah, doctors don't like admitting fault because of medical lawsuits. Now, doctors are not responsible for the legal system, right? They just have to live and work within it. So getting mad at doctors for not admitting fault, it's not just like they wake up in the morning and say, I'm never going to admit fault. It's that they don't like admitting fault. And doctors take all of these seminars about how to talk to patients so you don't get sued. Doctors don't want to lose their patients' respect and confidence. I think that's normally why they don't want to admit fault. No, it's not that. It's not that. Right? So doctors they go to seminars about, you know, here's what you can't say to patients. You can't admit this. And heaven forbid, if you are a doctor and you miscommunicate to a patient, the patient sues you, what if your insurance doesn't cover it? Ooh, welcome to living in a box, right? So I just want to sort of point this out as a whole, that the powers that be want us to all get mad at each other, right? The powers that be want us all to get mad at each other. So, what is the answer? Why are things going the way they are? Why are people getting mad at doctors and the doctors saying, we didn't make the system, we're just trying to survive within it? What is the root? And I've really been thinking hard about this. So hopefully I got it somewhat right. Yeah, I can't imagine in Canada, I can't imagine having a patient in significant pain and saying, well, I guess you can see a specialist in a year.
Oof.
Oof. I couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine being part of a system like that. But of course, people say, well, you know, doctors have a loyalty to their patients, a lot of them, and they're like, well, I don't want to give up on my patients and I've got to keep practicing and all of that, right? Thank you for the tip. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Right before I give you an answer that I think will blow your mind. Thank you for the tip. Double bow. I think you should have written the article for that doctor. The whiny attitude as written is just infuriating. Yeah. Everyone needs a little FU money in the world if you want to be truly honest. Well, they don't just get you through money, right? All right. So I'll tell you what I think the answer is. I'm going to try and sell the answer hard. Feel free to push back if it doesn't seem realistic or reasonable to you. Why do we fight with each other? Why do we fight with each other? What is the most foundational belief that causes these dysfunctions, these problems, these horrors in the world? The reason we fight with each other so much, the reason why these dysfunctions flourish and maintain and gain power, is because we cannot surrender our fetish for violence to the strictness of virtue. We cannot surrender our belief that the only path to virtue is through the bloody fists of violence, that virtue cannot be achieved without violence. If we cannot confront that demonic thought within our own hearts, there's no point fighting anybody else. We are raised, and I'm sure that there is a predilection for it as well, we are raised to love violence. I was raised with war. I was raised with comic books. And in all of the war and the Marvel movies and the DC movies and the comic books, the solution to all foundational conflicts was what? What was always presented as the solution to all foundational conflicts? Escalation. Violence, blood, death, destruction. When I was in school, and I climbed a fence to get a ball, and I was narked on by some a-hole prefect, what was the solution to me disobeying the rules? I don't even remember that it was a rule. I was six, and I climbed a fence to get a ball, and I was dragged up to the headmaster's office, and I was caned. Did they say, oh, did you know about the rule? Do you not agree with the rule? Tell me what, it makes sense. Here's why the rule existed. They reasoned with me. Nope. What was the solution to the headmaster disagreeing with my action? A beating. My father used to rap his children on the head hard. Ah, it stung. Like a little ball peen hammer. Bang. Did he reason? Was he curious? Nope. Bang. My mother, of course, incredibly violent. In school, if you did something they disagreed with. Some of the outright violence was gone by the time I got to junior high school, most of it. But if you disagreed with something, the teacher would make you stay after school. If you had a job, which I had, I could not afford to stay after school. I had to get to my job, so I had to obey. And if things got bad enough, they could put you in school prison for a year by holding you back. So you'd be the guy with hair on the back of his knuckles in the grade 6 class, way too big, way too awkward, and made fun of forever and ever, amen. Unable to date the girls because they were too young in your grade, because you're held back. Unable to date the girls in the grade you're supposed to be in because they think you're stupid. You're screwed. Your teenage years are wrecked. It's a softer power, but I'd rather just have a beating than be held back a year, and that was the punishment. Or they would call your parents and say, oh, he didn't come to school today, he's cutting class, you need to deal with this, and then bam, they would outsource the violence. We are so addicted to our bloodlust that we can't think of a fucking problem in the world that we don't want to pound someone into the ground in order to solve. Oh, do people need some healthcare? Okay, let's have the government force people to provide healthcare and force people to fund it. Violence is the only way to provide healthcare for people. Oh, you're saying kids need to learn how to read, write, and do arithmetic? Well, let's do that for a while, and then we'll just hit them with brutal ideology and teach them to hate themselves. But yeah, if we want kids to get educated, yeah, we got to force people to fund it and force people to send their kids and force people to pay. And if they don't, we throw them in jail. Got a problem? Bam! The fist will solve it. Have you seen those videos of the ninjas? Right? They take their sword out, they cut an apple falling through the air, and you can barely see anything move. That's how fast we are to draw our katanas when we want to solve a problem. Got problem? Draw sword. Got problem? Arm up. Got problem? Reload. Got problem? Call an airstrike. Got problem? Throw people in jail. Got problem? Cage them so they get raped. Got problem? Use force. That's all we can think of. It's reflexive, and I understand that in our human evolution. I understand all of that in our human evolution. Force was tragically the solution to most conflicts because people didn't have reason and they didn't have communication. They didn't have the language for it. They didn't have the debate. And right? Parents, got problem? Yell, intimidate, frighten. Dial up the cortisol. Get the child to self-attack. Beat, hit, confine, starve. Shame. Got problem? Use force. That's the problem. For doctors back in the day, the reason why we have licensure boards, not because the customers wanted them, is because the doctors wanted them. Oh, there's too many people who are providing healthcare services. It's really bad. So we need a licensure to make sure things are safe and proper and protected and that the customers are served. Well, the customers don't want it. They're happy. I talked about this many years ago with the eponymously named, poor name, Dr. Roderick Long. Yes, his name is Rod Long. And he wrote a great article on the provision of healthcare prior to the government stepping in with licensures. And you could get an entire year's worth of access to healthcare for the price of 1 or 2 days' salary. You joined a friendly society, they were called. And the problem was, of course, that doctors felt that they were being undercut, so they ran to the government, want the unearned. And if we can't confront the basic demonology in our hearts that all complex problems require a fist to solve and cannot be solved in any other way, then people, because we have this addiction, sadists will keep inventing problems, so we keep suggesting more and more violence. More and more violence. Want people to take a vaccine? Well, hide all the documents from them, hide all the tests from them, hide all the validation that it's safe from them, give immunity, legal immunity to the manufacturers, and take away their jobs and their ability to travel or eat in a mall. I was kicked out. I was kicked out of malls. Would like to eat. Show your certificate. Nope. You get to eat in the snowy parking lot. Force, force, force. It's all we can think of. It's our reflex. It comes out of parenting, of course. But, you know, how did public school start in America? Public school started in America despite a 98% literacy rate and a population so literate that the rather complex Moby Dick was a national bestseller Herman Melville's novel, go try and read it, and imagine people these days reading it when we've had 150 years of advancements in nutrition and education, when we've fallen to half the IQ, it seems, of the early Americans. So why? Because there were a bunch of non-Protestants, right? America was founded as a Protestant nation. A bunch of non-Protestants coming in. They said, well, we're going to lose our culture. You know, it's going to become un-American if we don't have the government take over education. Huh. How's that working out for you? How are American values? How well are they being preserved by the government educational system, right? Got a problem? Run to the government. Got a problem? Use force. It's not just a good idea. It's the law. Right? And that's binary thinking. And binary thinking comes from trauma, and trauma leads to more binary thinking. Binary thinking is so easy to manipulate. It's either this or it's that. Why the fuck would I have to listen to your two options as if you are some god of reality? Well, either the problem doesn't get solved, or we throw people in jail at gunpoint. Okay, that's binary thinking. Binary thinking is the mark of a slave mentality, which we all have. I understand it, right? This is why, to be free, we have to reject binary thinking. Either this or this. Women getting pregnant out of wedlock. Welfare state. Alimony. That's it. Just put guns to the heads of mostly males and give their money almost exclusively to females. Otherwise, there's no solution. Well, even single mothers would be infinitely better off without welfare, because single mothers are incredibly isolated, and isolation bad enough for men, in particular torture for women. Without welfare, the single mothers would all band together. They'd rent big houses. They'd have a community. Their kids would have other kids around. They'd get to share parenting duties. They'd work. And they'd be way happier. Way happier. You were kicked out of a mall for being unvaxxed? Love to hear that story. What is the story? I was eating at a mall with my daughter, and a woman came up and said, where's your certificate? Said, don't have one. Said, well, you'll have to leave. Don't make me call security. And we took our food and we ate in a snowy parking lot. So, if we can't see, when people don't even see their reflexive call to violence whenever there's a problem, they can't see it. And that's part of the horror of accumulated violent or coercive solutions to complex social problems, is that if you start saying, maybe violence or force or coercion should only be used in an extremity of self-defense and in no other way, place, shape or form. So, we can't even see how much of our society is founded on this knee-jerk, got problem, use force, got problem, use force, got problem, use force. One solution? Draw katana. One solution, reload. One solution, point guns. Most people can't even see it. And they think that they're solving problems when all they are is handing around justifications for endless wells of bloody violence. Somebody says, I see it as a repeat of parents causing siblings to fight. Escalate until compliance is achieved, yeah. It is a narcissistic mindset to say the solution is what I want and escalation is the only way to get it. Yeah, I love how school uses itself as a punishment, yes. Education is so wonderful that if you really screw up, we'll just give you more education. Somebody says they start most meetings with, what problem are we trying to solve? Amazing how often we don't even have a problem clearly specified. Yeah. So, this is the against me argument. It's designed to wake people up to the violence they worship. If we can't get people to stop worshiping violence, fighting amongst each other is pointless. Did you see Kamala Harris talk about fining parents for truancy of their kids? Yeah, I saw that. Isn't that wild? Yes, school. It's so wonderful that parents have to be threatened with jail if they can't force their kids to go. Lovely. You were held back a year. Actually, I was kicked back 2 years, but I was 2 years ahead in England. When I came to Canada, they kicked me back 2 years. Steffi, you're assuming everyone is capable. Simple R versus K. Society cannot exist with more blood being sucked than it can replace. Don't fucking tell me what I'm assuming. That's rude as hell. Do not do that. No decent person's going to want to hang around with you if you just make up these phantoms of ghost thoughts, put them in the other person's mind and say, I'm correcting you. When the hell have I ever said everyone is capable? Oh, babies? Are babies capable? How about people with significant mental developmental delays who end up with an IQ of 60? Are they capable? You don't think I know this stuff? Steph, you're assuming everyone is capable. Don't fucking tell me what I assume. You can ask me a question if you want to have a decent and civilized conversation, but don't tell me what I'm assuming. It's ridiculous. How embarrassing. Don't do that stuff, man. That's really, really sad. And nobody's going to want to talk to you with any sense of self-knowledge or brains if you're going to just make up imaginary thoughts, project. Hey, Steph, if you were completely retarded, this is what you would say, so I'm going to correct you on that. My God, who the hell have you been hanging around with in life that you haven't had pushback on this nonsense before? Jesus. I love it. Well, if Steph was completely stupid, he would have said something like this, so I'm smarter than Steph because I've imagined he said something and I'm now correcting him. Yeah. It's like slowing Freddie Mercury down to 1/10 speed and saying, you know, he's not a very good singer because he sounds kinda territorially. He's too slow, man. Well, you just slowed him down. No, now somebody is saying, I have developmental delays but can score a high IQ. Yeah. Excellent. I may be an exception to your general rule. I'm going to add that. Because I think I'm adding something. When I was transferred from public school for sixth grade, I was a year ahead in math, but they put me with the other sixth graders. It was one of my favorite subjects, but their solution was to give me extra optional work, which I passed on. Yeah, that's James, right? Yeah. Oh, I'm so good at math. How nice for you. All right. Any other last thoughts, questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems, tips would be more than gratefully, deeply, humbly, and accepted. I'm not going to call all the people over on Rumble cheap, but there'd be no tips on the Rumble side tonight. I'm just saying, if you find value and use in what I'm doing, and how many thousands of hours I've saved you by not having commercials. You ever have a podcast that you like, and it's like suddenly there's a commercial for something? Think of, if you've listened to a bunch of shows, think of the thousands of hours I've saved you, or hundreds of hours I've saved you by not having commercials. Well, That's a benefit. Don't let everyone else pay for the benefit that you... It's a basic integrity thing, right? Don't let everyone else pay for the benefit that you achieve, right? It's like, I don't have a bunch of commercials. I don't have sponsors. I don't have a break. So, you know, when you're falling asleep, you can just listen to me. There's not a break. And often people have loud bumper music for their breaks, which can be kind of startling. Think of the car crashes I've saved by not having commercials because people don't have to flip ahead on their player, which you should never do, right? Never take your eyes off the road or your hands off the wheel. But yeah, think of all of the good things that has happened in the world, not just now, but in the future. It doesn't have to all get recompiled without commercials, which would happen in the future and lose quality thereby. But just think of all of the great things that has happened from not having commercials. Think of all of the great conversations. People are crying about their childhoods and there's not some 5-minute ad for a VPN, which then you, right, think about all of the flow and all of the beautiful thing that happens without commercials. Well, that is because the show relies on donations. freedomain.com/donate. You know the right thing to do, and I'm promising you, you'll feel better when you do it. If you haven't donated, heaven forbid, or donated for a while, even if you're listening to this later, the facts are still the facts. Somebody says, in school, we learned government did actions to better our society, like fight a certain war, pass some law, or create some social programs. We learned that violence is the answer to complex problems. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Steve says, school just bludgeons you to a generalized level when you could be exceptional in any one thing or more. Oh, yeah, I was constantly hived off from the classes and given my own work. There was another kid I worked with in England. We were basically just told, go read these books, tell us what you find in them, because they recognized that we were completely bored doing the general stuff. As Steve says, we have a 6-year-old who reads at an 8th, 9th grade level. Can't imagine telling them to hold up and slow it down for the sake of classmates, yeah. Your mother used to call the police on you, me too. Yeah, she certainly did. That was amazing. Thank you. Loads of value here. I really do appreciate that. Thank you. Time to go have a good think. Yeah, imagine today's Free Domain episode brought to you by Boeing and ExpressVPN. Yeah, great stuff. Not having commercials. Yeah, I can't do it. Can you imagine? Can you imagine Socrates in the marketplace saying, all right, we're just in the middle of solving the concept of justice, but first I need to tell you about these wonderful pitas you can get over at Donnie's here. Let's head over there. Can you imagine? It don't work. All right. Thanks, everyone, so much. I really do appreciate your very kind support and questions and comments. It's really great to have these conversations as a whole. I treasure them in my heart of hearts, and I think the world finds great benefit for them now and, of course, in particular, into the future. All right. Thank you so much. Have yourselves a wonderful week. Lots of love from up here. I will talk to you soon. Thanks for coming by today. Bye.